This is Next. I'm Morgan Springer. Cities around New England have declared racism a public health crisis. Today, we're digging into its connection to environmental justice with Catherine Morris. Kat is a scholar activist focusing on environmental justice. She's also graduating with a master's in public policy from the University of Connecticut this month. In a TEDx talk last fall, Kat described how environmental racism has affected her home state.
Connecticut is not exempt from this, as 1/5 of the entire state's pollution is located in Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven, Stamford, and Waterbury. The 5 out of 169 municipalities where 71% of all the state's people of color live. Bridgeport and Hartford, two of my hometowns, have the largest and second largest incinerators, yet I remember struggling to find a good grocery store and healthy food.
So, Kat, what you're talking about in your TEDx talk is environmental racism. And you mentioned growing up in two of those 5 cities in Connecticut. I'm wondering, did you have a sense as a kid or a teenager that you were living in a place that had more pollution than other towns and cities nearby?
Yeah, I'd say the thing is I've moved a lot of times in my life, so I've been able to see what that looks like in practice and what it looks like when that's not the case. So when I first moved to Connecticut, I'm originally from New Jersey, I lived in Ansonia and then Trumbull. And there's a lot of greenery there. There's no difficulty in accessing a Stop and Shop or a ShopRite. So once I moved to Bridgeport, I noticed there was a lot more litter on the ground. I noticed you can see the smog in the air anytime I was driving anywhere, right? I saw the incinerator. It wasn't far from my home, probably only a couple of miles. And I noticed that we couldn't swim in Seaside Park, which is probably one of the most beautiful places in this state. But it's heavily polluted, so much so that there would be days where they banned us from swimming in the water. And I also noticed that a lot of my friends had asthma. And I live in Hartford now, and I see the same things over and over again, right? And it's something that I can't ignore anymore, especially after going to school and being really invested in solving the problem and doing the research to understand just how prevalent of an issue it is in Connecticut and also across the country has made it kind of impossible for me to like not focus very heavily on it and try my best to do what I can.
New England cities like Boston, Burlington, Vermont, and New Haven, Connecticut, just to name a few, have made official recognitions declaring racism a public health crisis. And Vermont and also your home state of Connecticut are considering bills right now to do that. Now, making this declaration is one thing. I think making real structural change is another. So when it comes to environmental justice and health, what are some practical policies that can help?
Yeah, there's so many different ways to go about this. In terms of green spaces specifically, it looks like making sure that you're cleaning up pollution, making it so that we don't have excess waste in our water bodies specifically that are polluted illegally or legally, unfortunately. It also looks like planting more trees, because as you plant more trees, you're developing your tree canopy in a way that helps you block out the increasing heat from the sun, right? As we know with climate change, where our planet is just getting hotter. And as our planet overall is getting hotter, areas that are cities are more likely to have a lot of asphalt, right? And so that kind of just additionally heats the city in a way that makes those communities more likely to have asthma attacks like we discussed before, but also heat strokes.
There is a way to strategically address climate change and address environmental justice. And as an activist, you advocate love, capital L-O-V-E, to tackle climate change. Can you explain what you mean?
Yeah. So personally, I think love, or radical love specifically, entails accountability and responsibility as much as it entails compassion and empathy. it also makes dehumanization and the devaluation of life overall, not just human life, but plant life and animal life, it makes it impossible. So when I talk about love, I mean it in that sense, but in an organizing space, I think of it as an acronym. So L, as in listen to learn. No single person has all the answers. I don't have all the answers. So I actively listen to other people to learn from them. And that develops a collective genius and a way that seeing the world and seeing solutions is super innovative and resilient. O, organize with an open mind. We need to get clear on the goal of eliminating environmental racism and effectively addressing climate change. But there's no one way to do that, so we need to think outside the box and get really intentional in terms of what we know needs to happen and how we can make it happen in a way that's most equitable. V, value a variety of perspectives. So in that similar vein, I hold intersectionality as a foundation for my activism because I know that it's powerful. But I also know that with that, I need to take the steps of educating myself and the people that I work with, right? I need to be able to check myself as much as I check other people. Holding everyone accountable is the only way to like really grow beyond yourself and your ego. And E, engage everyone in every way possible. Reach out to everyone and from all walks of life. So you have to be mindful of how their time, right? If they're a working person, or how their ability or language barriers may serve as ways that make your form of activism inaccessible. And so you can't do that. You have to be really intentional and think ahead of time to make sure that you are inclusive in your fight for justice. So that's love to me. So listen to learn, organize with an open mind, value a variety of perspectives, and engage everyone in every way possible.
Yeah, I mean, for some people, in the face of environmental racism, structural racism, I imagine it could feel hard to love, both in terms of the acronym and in terms of the emotion.
Yeah, but, you know, with that, I'd say you still need to choose self-love. And I think when you do that, it makes it easier to love other people because there's a level of patience and maybe flexibility that comes with that. You have to like humanize people on all sides of things. That doesn't mean you need to endure violence or engage with people who really only care about harming you. That's not what I'm asking anyone to do, because that would not be choosing self-love. But it is a matter of understanding that we're all existing in this shared ecosystem, and there's no way that we're going to not do that, right? So we have to rely on each other, because no matter what, we are interdependent. So we can't do anything alone. So unfortunately, although it might be hard to kind of choose love and really practice that in a way that is impactful, it's necessary, and I think it's worthwhile.
That was Catherine Morris, a scholar activist in environmental justice who just wrapped up a master's of public policy at UConn. Listen to Next from the New England News Collaborative, wherever you get your podcasts.